This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Jonathan Cole is a very successful and some may say one of the most innovative architects in the Kansas City area. With Pendulum KC, he's the owner of one of the very few black-owned architecture firms in the country. He's helped design stadiums and arenas for the Oakland A's, the Golden State Warriors, and 22 minor league baseball parks across the country. In 2007, he launched Pendulum. That's his company. Now he's turning his focus on projects outside the world of sports in Kansas City. They include the Wyco Vintage, the St. Regis Apartments, the Truce Village, the Crosstown Substation, and the East Village Apartments. Jonathan Cole joins us now. And Jonathan, welcome to Up to Date. So nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Steve. I'm a longtime listener, first-time guest. My wife and I are huge fans of your show.
Oh, I appreciate that. You can come on now anytime you want, Jonathan. Much appreciated. You know, you made your name by designing stadiums and arenas. When did you decide to broaden your focus to other kinds of projects?
I think I saw an opportunity in the last 5 years to really focus our attention on, one, increasing our profile here locally in Kansas City. I think there's great opportunity with the projects that we've seen. I think there's just, with the Truce Village project that we'll probably talk about a little bit here, a big opportunity for us.
Now, you've done, I mentioned in the opening, 22 minor league baseball parks around the country. Does designing stadiums, does it ever get old after a while?
No, I love it. I'm passionate about the game and the nuances, especially in minor league baseball. I mean, they're so unique.
Yeah.
There's so much opportunity to respond to the context of each of the different kind of cities that we travel to. So there's just great opportunity for creativity.
What's the key to designing a terrific baseball park?
I think thinking about the fans first. I think that's one of the things that minor league baseball and teams excel at, is really creating family fun and entertainment. So if you start there and really focus on how to enhance that and maximize the opportunity for families to have a good time in quirky, you know, little exclusive and neat little areas around the bowl and different places to experience the game from different vantage points, I think you've really won at the end of the day.
You get a sense just watching the way the sports architecture is evolving, that the comfort of the fan is becoming more and more paramount as the years pass. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. If you look back at the late 1800s, early 1900s, everybody went to a ball game in a bowler hat and suit and tie. That's not the case anymore. I think with Camden Yards in 92, that changed the game for baseball, ballpark designs in general. You know, all of the sight line obstructions that you might have saw at historic Tiger Stadium in Detroit,
right,
or some of your other locations. Those started going away. And now you're looking at wide concourses. You're looking at, culinary experiences within the facility. You're looking at interesting seating areas, shade. Those are all things that are probably the very beginning thoughts of a design process when we're starting to design a ballpark.
I can't help but ask, how confident are you that we're going to see a downtown baseball stadium in Kansas City? What's the buzz out there?
That's a good question. We try to keep our fingers on the pulse, but I think there's 10 years left on the lease.
Right.
So it remains to be seen. I think the ownership group is very progressive, and I think they're pretty smart folks. So I think there's opportunity.
You know, just in looking over your projects, Jonathan, and what you're engaged in these days, it just strikes me that you are all over the place, not just in Kansas City. You're working all over the country. How do you keep everything straight?
You know, one of my mentors told me that the way you grow is by investing in great resources. And I've got an incredible team working with me. And no one works for me. Everybody works with me. So I've just got incredible talent around me, and I think that's the key to success. That's one of the things my father always said, you have to have the right tools for the job. So we invest in resources. You know, we put people around us that are very talented, And I think right now we've got some of the most talented people we've ever had.
Huh. How large is Pendulum now in terms of staff?
10 people now and growing.
Wow.
We probably have a few less than my employees would like because we're always working. But, I think that keeps us sharp. That keeps us agile.
I think you're describing a public radio station here too, Jonathan. You're not from Kansas City, are you?
No, I was born in Los Angeles, California, and then I was raised about 30 miles east of that in Pomona, California.
How did you wind up out here?
Well, you know, that goes back to sports. Kansas City is the sports architecture capital of the world.
Right.
You know, the lion's share of all the firms that participate in sport as a dedicated marketplace are headquartered here. So I think that makes Kansas City really unique and pretty exciting.
How did that happen? How did Kansas City become the capital of the sports architecture world?
I think it started with the sports complex, where the Chiefs and Royals play now.
Right.
Those are icons when you think about the designs being way ahead of their time. I was just reading an article that talked about, you know, the rolling roof between the two. That was proposed in the 60s. So,
wow.
I mean, the designers there were from outer space, right? I mean, it was just mm-hmm. unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
So for them to still be relevant today, for the most part, I think is, you know, where it started. And then all of the firms that have kind of all of the architects that have come out of those early firms, I think, and decided to settle here in Kansas City has made us pretty important.
Does Arrowhead Stadium need a rolling roof?
Well, I think if you think about, you know, the requirements of getting a Super Bowl, I think that would be one good reason. It's just about fan comfort. Again, it's what we talked about is how can you be more comfortable and for the fans and then more flexible for extended events in the wintertime when Super Bowl is typically, what, February or first week of February? So
mm-hmm. got to do something about that, right?
Absolutely.
Jonathan Cole is my guest. He's the owner of Pendulum KC, one of the very few Black-owned architecture firms across the country. Did you always want to be an architect?
You know, I started out with an interest in fine art and illustration. In my sophomore year of high school, I actually, between sophomore year and my graduation year, I was an airbrush illustrator for a small boutique greeting card company named Colorful Greetings. And I continued with my interest in art even through my university training. I was a art framer at Aaron Brothers Art Mart, which is a regional art store. But really, my path to architecture was inspired by my cousin, Vicki Reed. She was a fan of my art, but she started asking questions about, you know, where I thought that might take me. And that conversation led to more research on my part, because up to that point, I hadn't really had any exposure to architecture as a profession. But once I dug in, I was hooked.
Well, the leap between fine art and architecture, I'm imagining here, it's not all that great, is it?
I think it's certainly related. You know, I see all architects as designers. We all want to design things. I think we have we apply the training that we've received and a path of problem solving and critical thinking, which I think you can apply to art. So, no, I think it's very close.
I was going to say, what do you ultimately find so satisfying about architecture?
To me, the most gratifying feeling that is often emotional for me is when you design something and one, you have to kind of laugh to yourself. I often do and say, man, I can't believe I convinced my client to let us design and then build this thing. I mean, you're talking about on the scale that we're working at millions of dollars that get invested into an idea that you have to proof in concept, but ultimately you're designing something that's going to stand for could be 100 years.
Hmm.
That's incredible. You know, to think about, you know, now my children have walked through buildings that my team has designed and I've led that effort. That's an incredible feeling.
Huh. How did you get into the world of sports architecture?
I worked for a large firm in Irvine, California, right out of after graduation, and started working on the Oakland Arena project. That was really my start. Lived there in Oakland for 3 years or so.
Is that the Golden State Warriors' new home, or is that something else?
It was first the Oakland A's, then that transitioned to the Raiders project renovation, and then Golden State Warriors. And then after that, I was asked to move to Kansas City and work in at the sports headquarters. And that's when I started working on minor league baseball. My first project was the Dayton Dragons, Fifth Third Field, now Day Air Field. But that's the arguably most, I think they have the record in all of sports for the most consecutive sellouts. And they've been huge.
I'm just wondering, Jonathan, what are you particularly good at when it comes to designing a stadium or an arena? Do you have your own specialty when you work on a team and you're focusing on a stadium, for example?
The details. I think attention to detail is most important. I always say that I think contextual design is the key. So, you know, you don't want to design a ballpark in city X and then just cookie cut that in city Z. So I think the idea of digging into the details, getting to know people before the project even starts, getting to understand the context and what's important for each of the locations we design in, and then amplifying those beautiful things, you know, all the little pieces and parts that make that city what it is.
Give me a few other examples of what details you might be talking about there.
Well, I think it's everything down to, you know, the general design is, you know, the seating bowl, everybody thinks about that, but it's even the little nuances of, as you're walking down the street in an urban context, can you see the field? Are there little opportunities to, as you walk by building massing, to get peeks into the field, which is important? We call that the community green space. Huh. Or even down to, you know, at the gates, are you able to integrate logos and signage and graphics into, you know, all the little pieces so that there's a story throughout? And we've actually been really successful in integrating history into the ballparks. The ballpark that we designed, Dunkin' Donuts Park in Hartford, Connecticut, there's a Negro Leagues history there, as well as history with Hank Greenberg, who went on to play in Detroit.
Sure.
So we were able to integrate some of those historic elements. As a matter of fact, Johnny Schoolboy Taylor, his family, threw out the first pitch in Hartford on opening day.
No kidding.
Just really special memories that we're able to create. You know, it's pretty inspiring.
Architect Jonathan Cole is my guest. There are very few Black-owned architectural firms. Why is that?
Well, I think it's a great question. I think we should start with the statistics. Out of roughly 116,000 licensed architects in this nation, there's 2,407 that happen to be African American. 519 female, 1,888 male. So of that 2,407, the number of individuals that have been entrusted with an equity position in their firm is it's a staggeringly low percentage. It could be an issue of representation a little bit. I think it could be a little bit about, you know, are we helping kids to understand the same thing my cousin helped me to understand? It's like, hey, have you thought about this path? Which, you know, again, I had no exposure to architecture before the 10th grade. So I think it's something that we need to think about.
How much of a factor is obtaining capital part of the issue here?
I think it's part of it when you think about being entrepreneurial and starting your own practice. We were pretty fortunate. The Carson family, Carson Bank, gave us our shot. They gave us an origination loan to start this business. And they were not in that space. They were, I think, normally they were financing farm equipment and things like that. And they took a leap of faith with us to say, hey, we're going to give you $60,000 to start your business. And we made good on that. We paid that loan off and we've continued our relationship with them. So I think a lot of it has to do with having access to capital, yes, and having people that believe in you enough to give you a shot.
So to what extent is part of your mission opening the door for other upcoming Black architects?
I think it's a huge part of our mission. I think it's a part of our mission to, you know, expose to everyone, including women. You know, if you look at what's going on in sports right now, there is a big movement to provide opportunities for minorities, but especially we're seeing, you know, women in executive roles, which I think is fantastic. It's about time. So I think we look at that the same way. I think, you know, we can do everything that we can possibly to open doors for people of all sorts to get experience and hopefully look at our example and do their own thing.
Well, let's turn to one of the projects you're working on here in Kansas City, Jonathan, because it, at least on paper, very, very exciting. We talked about the Truce Village on this program back in February. That's a $162 million redevelopment for Truce. It's between 31st and Linwood. Lots of amenities here, new commercial space, a gym, an amphitheater, 99 units of affordable housing geared towards single-parent households, a grocery store, and even a new museum devoted to Native Americans. I mean, it's a mouthful. On paper, you know, it's a game-changer for that neighborhood. Where are we with the project? Am I seeing all this correctly?
You are. It's a very exciting project. I would say it's actually special. We're very passionate about it. And I think with Tim Bowman developing it, it's lightning in a bottle. I think all of the different components, when you think about it, look at the construction that's already happened and happening right now. Just north of that, you've got a pretty established neighborhood of not just Beacon Hill in single family homes, but you've got multifamily housing. I don't know the numbers on the total capacity, but quite a few. And then just to the west of the site, you've got new housing going up as well. So what I see with this development of underutilized buildings for the past, 40, 50 years,
right,
is it's a support system for all of the housing that's there now. I mean, when you're targeting grocery, that instead of driving all the way to Westport, or maybe you can come downtown to the market here to have a market on site there in walking distance. I think, you know, really emphasizing pedestrian activity in that area is pretty game changing for the city.
Some folks are concerned about gentrification. You've heard that already. How is that being addressed?
Well, we're not displacing people, that's for sure. So I think if we were, you know, these buildings have been abandoned and underutilized for quite some time. I think we can continue to let them stay that way, or we can, you know, make some changes. And like one of my mentors says, people hate change but love progress. I see what we're doing for the Truce Village as substantial progress. I think it's going to, again, be a game changer for the city.
There's an interesting story about how you got involved in that project. Tell us about it.
You know, I'm pretty attentive. I make a point to respond to people that reach out to me. And I had announced that I had purchased 100% of my firm, the last 49% of my firm. And Tim Bowman reached out to me on LinkedIn. And I think it was like 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And I responded immediately. And that led to a conversation about opportunity and potential for the project. And once we got to meet and really walk through the buildings, I was really impressed with Tim and his intricate knowledge of all the buildings. He walks those sites daily and relentlessly, so he knew every inch of them. And that, to me, meant he has passion for the project.
Where is that project right now? I know there are several phases for it. Where are we?
Right now, the Shankman building, which is a historic building, and the Michelson building are probably the furthest along with being cured. All of the brick on the east-facing side has been, for the most part, restored, and the buildings are now in a framing process to get ready for the first tenants. The Tycor building is the next building, which is the one that we have been working on quite a bit. We've got a framing permit for that. And we're just basically getting rid of all of the old junk that was in there, clearing those buildings out and getting them ready for drywall and finishing for what we would call a white box or a warm shell for businesses to move into there. The next up would be Harkness. So you've got Tycor, Shankman, Michelson, Harkness, and then the Firestone building, which is an incredibly beautiful building. That's kind of the main focus right now for the block. And then after that, we'll be following back up with the garden area or the, you know, public assembly area, the green space behind it, and then housing to kind of close the donut, if you will, on the east side, on the west side of Forest.
So when you're done with this project, to what extent will Troost Avenue look like it did maybe back in the 40s or 50s?
It's a great question. We've done a lot of research and looked at a lot of historic imagery of what things look like. We've got some images of Tycor from 1905, I believe. There's some old lithographs of that. So what we've done is really carefully looked at how do we, you know, there was a difference between the buildings in 1905 to 1950 where some additions were made. So we're trying to take the best of those. And since Tycor is not on the historic register, we have some leeway, but getting it as close as possible to what those postcards look like to give it an authenticity that we think is important. And of course, the Art Deco aspect of all those buildings is phenomenal.
You know, tell me about a little bit about the art of developing a vision for what you do, Jonathan. Is it always, you know, is it always a gut instinct or does it happen after you've put a lot of foundational work in on a project?
It's a lot of research. I think it's a lot of, I don't want to say trial and error, but back and forth. You know, it's interesting as consumers, we often look at things and think that what we buy is the only idea, or we, you know, the first idea was the final idea. And, you know, it's a process. So with Troost Village, if you look, we work in virtual reality. So in building information modeling. So we've been spinning this model around and making slight changes for, you know, since June of last year. So we make adjustments, you know, and we get feedback from folks, you know, feedback from people that are even working on the site, and then we make informed decisions. So it's a constant curating of ideas to get to the right answer at the end. But it's, you know, it's a lot of work.
What's the timeline to complete the Troost Village?
I think true to what Tim mentioned, I think, you know, in the next 3 to 4 years, we could be at a complete build out. You know, we're halfway through the first portion of the funding for the building infrastructure and curing. We're going into some major utility work here coming up in the next couple months. You know, love to see the first tenant in the building here in the next, but before the end of the year as well.
Wow.
We're marching along. It's a real project. It's not just fluff.
Now, you've designed a lot of stadiums. I just am curious, what teams do you root for?
Well, I root for the Royals, for, of course. That's the only right answer.
There's
right?
The only right answer. You just passed the test. There you go. Well, that's Jonathan Cole. He's the principal at Pendulum KC, an architect. Jonathan, what a good conversation. I wish you the best with your work, and we sure appreciate you taking some time with us today.